Hello, everybody, and welcome to this Charity Digital podcast. I hope that you're all keeping well and winding down a little before our Easter bank holiday weekend. And I also hope that you'll be able to get a break from your screens and all that technology that we use, which is really vital for our existence in today's world. We can't escape from technology, and we know that the right technology helps charities significantly by increasing their revenue and makes it possible to expand a charity's reach in the products and services that they offer. So with this in mind, we thought we'd gather together some of our Charity Digital podcast regulars who are absolute experts, force them to brush up on their latest high-tech fundraising trends and ask them to demystify the art of using high-tech for fundraising and look at how it's rapidly shifting this fundraising world in which we live in. It's an interesting time. It's exciting. Blockchain is increasing transparency. Cryptocurrencies are expanding income streams. NFTs are offering new fundraising avenues. VR is digitally demonstrating impact. AI is automating the act of appealing to donors. It seems like a massive, brave new world out there. Joining me on the panel today, we have my colleagues, Chris Hall, Head of Marketing, Laura Stanley, Content Lead, and Johan Mark Jones, Content Editor, to discuss how charities can use high tech to raise funds, how charities are already raising funds, and what that means for the future of fundraising. Hello, Chris, Laura, and Johan. How are we doing? How's
Good
your
morning,
week going?
Liz. It's going well, thanks. How are you? I was just thinking as you were... it's worth doing these podcasts just for the introductions alone. I think I get my ego boosted every time. I've never been called an expert so much. People usually refer to me as more of a legend in my own bath time more than an expert.
Well, I consider you as that, Chris. So there you go. Good morning, Johan and Laura. Shall we get kicking? Let's get discussing this. The high-tech people out there, what are they using for fundraising? What are you excited about?
So I can kick us off. For me, I think the exciting fundraising tools that are coming down the line at the minute are blockchain and cryptocurrency. They're the buzzwords. They're the ones we're all hearing about. You know, over the last few years, we've seen actually more and more charities develop or partner with the tech to accept donations through digital cryptocurrencies. I'm sure you've heard of them all. There's Bitcoin, I think, which is, you know, in a little bit of research I was doing, it's the ninth most valuable asset in the world right now, which is just mental when you think about it. I don't want to know what the other eight are. It's incredible to think about. It wasn't that long ago, it was just becoming a thing. But there's loads of other cryptocurrencies as well. You've got Ethereum, Litecoin, Cardano, Polkadot, Stellar, Binance Coin. And if any of you out there were caught out like me by Dex April Fool's post, you also might think you've got Tooncoin on the go, which I was all for investing in before I realised it was April 1st. And it was actually my cousin who was like, that was an April Fool's joke. I hadn't even registered that with me, that was April Fool's. I was like, first Santander, now they're taking on the crypto world. That was all for them. But generally, crypto and blockchain present huge opportunities for charities to really boost income and donations. As I was sort of alluding to there, it's becoming an increasingly popular form of currency, especially with the lower age groups. And we often get asked, you know, how can we as charities reach Gen Z, reach more millennials, reach more of the younger demographic? This is one way to potentially do that. It offers funds that are really easy to access and can be transferred easily as well, which is why it's becoming so popular with said demographic. And it is so easy because of the fact that cryptocurrencies are actually, you know, as what they are, what they say, you know, they're on seal, they're digital currencies, they're decentralized currency, which means that they're used by those directly involved with the transaction rather than a centralized government or bank, which makes dealing with donations cost more when you go through the traditional traditional sense of donations. You know, as I said, it requires banks, it requires third-party financial firms. They all charge fees. There's processing fees. There's all of this sort of stuff. While crypto cuts out that middle person and essentially allows you to take donations straight from the donor. And it's also not tied to geography. So if you've got a charity that borders expand beyond the UK, you don't need to worry about currency conversion costs or anything like that either. Another one of the more key benefits is transparency. Cryptocurrencies work using this blockchain technology, which everybody's heard of, but nobody knows what it's all about. So I'll try and give you a bit of a technical definition of it before going into something that might make it a little bit easier to understand. Blockchain is essentially a ledger of transaction data that is owned and maintained by all the users that are in the blockchain system. Random actors in the market act as these quote-unquote nodes to verify and make sure that transactions added to the blockchain are real. These transactions are encrypted and added onto what we call the public ledger. And this ledger discourages fraud because it ensures complete transparency of all transactions that are carried out. It's always tracked and it's always verified as well. Nothing can actually be changed or altered once it's in the ledger, and it guarantees security against any kind of data manipulation. So ultimately, this makes it really easy for those in the chain to see when changes are made and currency transactions can be traced. To put that in a charity context, they'll hopefully made it a little bit more understandable and break through the jargon a little bit. A really good example would be a donor making a gift. You know, they can see through the blockchain how that money is being used at any time that they want, which works really well in a charity's favor, especially at the minute and historically throughout charities where we're looking to increase public trust in charities and all that sort of stuff. It gives that real sense of transparency from both sides of the donation. It is worth mentioning, though, that as with any new tech, there are some challenges. The main one being sort of anonymity. While the transaction itself and the amount of money being donated is transparent, cryptocurrency donations can be anonymized with relative ease. So this makes it hard to see who is donating, which is obviously problematic from a lot of different issues. But the biggest one is there's some ethical challenges that arise off the back of that as well. You know, as charities, we need to make sure we're not accepting money from individuals or organizations that are criminal, have reputational issues, or involved in activity that does not match our core beliefs, our missions, and our values. So that's one key issue that, you know, we'll hope blockchain and crypto will overcome eventually. Another is how cryptocurrencies and blockchain are produced and used. There's a process called mining, which involves considerable process time and power from computers. I did a little bit of reading, and cryptocurrency mining now reportedly uses nearly as much electricity as Argentina, if you can believe that. And Bitcoin's energy consumption has more than quadrupled over the past 4 years. So this is something we do really need to keep an eye on as we sort of go into the crypto and blockchain world a bit more. You know, making sure that the environment's not being damaged by the power needed to mine cryptocurrency, and obviously increasing the use of renewable energy and being more mindful about our environment going forward will help mitigate the risk. It is the same for most things, though. The cloud does the same, not to the same degree, but anything that requires computer storage or power does require some form of energy to make it. So it's one of those things, like it's a continuous circle, it's a continuous journey trying to make things better. But you need to, as you innovate, these things tend to happen and overcome. I think overall, if crypto was going to die out, and this is where I kind of sit on it all, if crypto and blockchain was going to go away, it would have gone away by now. Blockchain's actually been around since 2008. So that's been a hell of a long time, really. So I think there's still some, you know, there's definitely some kinks dying out, as I was talking about, but there's some real benefits to charities too. And at the very least, I think charities should be looking at it and trying to understand what it is and how they could potentially benefit from it. And above everything else, prepare themselves to use it for when it potentially does go mainstream, as I think it's a case of when, not if.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with all that. And I think there's some other points that you raised that I saw. There's some potential cons that could be related to what you said. So one of the things you mentioned was the sort of benefit of traversing geographical boundaries, which I think blockchain does bring. But then at the same time, there are different regulations within those geographical boundaries. Some are barely existent, but some do actually impose sort of restrictions on companies and charities. So if you are doing that, you actually have to be abreast of the recent changes and constantly sort of keep up with it. And I think that developing regulatory framework is something that with crypto, with all these high tech, it's really constricting because you always have to be on top of it. You always have to be looking at what's going on. But I agree with Chris, mainly in that the tough thing about it is that if you don't fundraise with this tech, you are going to be left behind. So blockchain drives NFTs, which I'm sure we'll get onto, but it's also the place that holds crypto. And so without sort of an awareness of it and how it works, but also a willingness to use it, you are simply going to raise less funds because you're not playing the game, essentially. So I think it's something to be aware of. And it's actually not that tough when we demystify it. You know, it's a quite a simple sort of, it's a simple tech that's based on just databases pushing through, really.
You've got to be in it to win it. But I think it's right. It's one of those that gets so bogged down in jargon and high language that it becomes more, it almost looks more convoluted than it actually is, really.
Yeah, it's super simple. It's just a very effective database with an irreversible progress forward, essentially, in some way. And also there's some examples of charities using it as well. So the World Food Programme are increasingly using it because that allows them to give cash transfers without these restrictions and without these sort of problems that can be created by centralised systems, particularly in places like they've done it in refugee camps in Jordan. It's an easy way to get money to refugees in those camps because they have access to it. An interesting one, which isn't actually fundraising, but St. Mungo's working with Alice. Alice is a social funding platform that uses sort of results-based financing. And Chris Mitt touched on this, but it's about transparency and ensuring that basically, you know, the charities are doing what they say they're going to do. The benefits of that social funding platform is basically they won't pay the charity the money until they can prove they've done what they said they were going to do with the money. What that does essentially is create a system where donors trust that what they're donating for is going to get done, because that's a massive problem. I think we all feel when we donate, we kind of go, is this going to get bogged down in admin? Is this going to fund salaries for CEOs? What I want when I donate to a homelessness charity is homeless people to have a better life. That's what you want. And blockchain actually allows you to have that transparency and actually see your fundraising, your donation go from I want to give £5 to support the homeless, and then you can see how it did that. And blockchain, that's where the actual transparency comes in, and you can see it happening. You can track where your donation goes. And, you know, of course, £5 isn't going to go directly to a homeless person. That's not how it would work. But you will see, and it puts this incentive on charities to make sure that they are doing their utmost to actually ensure that's happening. And with crypto, there's Crypto Giving Tuesday as well, which, you know, tons of charities are actually involved in crypto. I think that, again, as Chris said, you have to be in it to win it. And if you are not, I mean, people donate with crypto. You can either accept that or not. I would say you probably should. It will increase your fundraising. So, yeah, a lot to think about. But really, it just even a small bit of research, and I think you'll wrap your head around it really quickly. I mean, we all did.
Quite the leap for me, I have to say. I was of the belief that crypto was, I don't know, just a minefield. I had no idea where it would lie, but I feel a lot more clear on it now. Thank you. I think I know where we are.
Yeah, I think I have some friends who use crypto who just, they download the wallet and they bought the ones that they thought sounded good and they make money off it. And then they use it for transactions. It's just a stranger, slightly more convoluted currency. But I think if we were used to it, it would be even more demystified. I mean, currencies themselves are completely hostile. So I don't know.
Yeah. And everyone was right. Everything that starts was problematic at some point and misunderstood. So it's just going through the usual journey.
Exactly. There was one point where I didn't know how to use Twitter. Do you know what I mean? Like, I learned very quickly.
That's not the same thing at all.
Well, this is it. It's just a case of learning, isn't it? I mean, you've given some really good examples there, Johan. Have we got any others, or, you know, actually just thinking about, gosh, you know, what can charities actually do to start using this high tech? It's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, the examples with blockchain that's quite interesting is going into NFTs. Laura knows a bit about NFTs, I think, do you? Or I think we all.
Am I? I believe
all sort of very scared of NFTs.
Yeah, that I am. I, that's we can move exactly on to my opinion is I'm scared of them. Like,
Is that how you were scared of Twitter at the beginning, Laura?
Yeah, exactly. But much worse. But I don't know. I just saw all these footballers sharing the NFTs. Yeah. And I was like, is that what it is? but I've come to understand a little bit more about them since. So they're not a fad, I hear. Is that right, guys?
Yeah. I think so. I don't think they are.
You don't think that? You think they are?
No, I don't think they're a fad.
No, yeah, I'm not still like, can someone explain them better to me, please?
I mean, I've got this really pretentious way of explaining them, but there was like, in uni I did this essay called by Walter Benjamin, which was called The Work of Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction.
Oh, and I was thinking
of it today, and the basic thing was art used to have aura because you could only see one Mona Lisa, right? Because they couldn't reproduce it en masse. And then one day, suddenly, you've got the printing presses and everything like that. And suddenly, apparently, an artwork that's an original is no longer original, and there's hundreds of thousands of copies all around the world. And the essay is basically going, well, why do we still go to Paris and go to the Louvre? I mean, I don't, but why do people do it? And go to the Louvre and go and look at this one portrait, which is exactly the same as one I can click on at home. And I think that kind of might define why the NFT is so important, because you are buying the original and it has an aura about it, you know, because you Jack Dorsey, I think the CEO of Twitter, for charity, he sold his NFT of the first ever tweet, right? Raised millions. Why do people want that when you can go and look at that tweet? You can Google it, you know, you can go and have a look at it. But I think you want it because it has that aura, it has that sense of originality and ownership. And like, that's the driving force, I think, Laura, if this is remotely helpful, I think that's the driving force behind why people want to own NFTs, because you have an original artifact, original digital artifact. Mm. So maybe.
How can charities use them? Is it all the images that they have at their disposal, I guess?
I think it's basically the same way private collectors can use them. Essentially, you just sell them and raise money. The difference with charities, of course, is people are willing to do them because they seem like this fad. And someone like, I mean, Edward Snowden, I think, sold his for 5.4 million. But he just sold an NFT based on a Stay Free artwork. But he gives that to charities. So if charities are aware of it and they want to work with creators, that's the key. You can go with corporations. But a charity, COVID Aid, was a charity dedicated to supporting people affected by the pandemic. They auctioned off their logo as an NFT. They just sold their logo. So you have the original digital artifact of the logo. It didn't raise tons of money, but other things have, like digital artists. Beeple is really famous. They raise huge amounts of money. So £6 million raised for charity for the Open Earth Foundation. So you basically deal with it the way you deal with art, but people, collaborators and digital artists are creating them to sell for charity. And so charities, again, they just need to be open to it. And basically, I mean, you can read one or two articles on the charity digital website, and that'll really explain the basics of what NFTs are, and you can get involved almost immediately.
Amazing.
You're right. It's all about the prestige angle as well. It's almost like a charity auction, or, you know, as you said, like art collectors. It's having that original piece, and as well as working with partners, a lot of charities take a lot of photographs and a lot of good photographs. And I always think of WWF or any animal charity for that fact that we'll have a lot of photos of whether it's cats, dogs, lions, tigers, whales, sharks, that sort of thing. There's lots that are, you know, these things get submitted for like National Geographic Photo of the Year. That adds prestige to it. That's something that is can be sold, can be used to raise funds, can be used to make money, essentially. So there's lots of different ways I think you can use NFTs, whether it is partnering, whether it is looking at your own image bank and saying, okay, what's good for, what could I get for this, auctioning it off, that sort of thing. And it just opens up more doors, essentially, opens up new possibilities.
Yeah. The revenue stream, like you said in your intro, Liz, I think, And that is, it's so essential, particularly when you're hard pressed, like economically, charities need to think about mitigating risks with their revenue streams. And if they're too dependent on one thing, that could cause problems. You're too dependent on, you know, repeat donors. This is a it's a way of pivoting and finding these new revenue systems. And I think that's where they should be open, really. I was going to say we should move on to AI. Because I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, is that your speciality there, Laura?
Oh yeah, I think I know a bit about AI. Well, I've had a look into it. Yeah, AI is a lot different, I think, because it's, I think you're not owning anything, are you? But charities, are you not selling anything on? But it can be a really good tool for like customer service and for stewardship, and also for like gaining trust, I think, and showing. If I would say it's more less about like, it's about, if I'm trying to explain this in a good way, and I'm failing miserably. The bit with, so you know how we said about blockchain shows people where their money is going? I think it does that in a less sort of immediate way. So like there are some chatbots that have been, so chatbot uses AI technology. I think there was one used by WaterAid where they linked you up with a sort of fictional service user, so you can see where your money was going, and that helps, you know, gives a bit of immediacy to your donation, doesn't it? Like, that's exactly what's going to happen to the money that I'm giving right now. So I think that's really good. But then, and you know, there are other ways that it's being used, that just if someone is talking to you on Facebook and they want to know how to donate, you can take them to exactly the place they need to go to. So it can be used in, either as a customer service tool or you know, in a more direct way to sort of drive empathy. And I think it's quite interesting in that way. I think the main problem with it is probably accessibility, but I actually think the biggest benefit is also that, because I think for certain audiences, they're not going to like AI or chatbots. Like, you know, everyone's had that moment of trying to get through to customer service when you just want them to understand what you're saying. And it's a chatbot, but then there are Gen Z in particular, I think, and millennials, we're a bit phone averse. So if we can get like a very basic request dealt with on a chatbot, if we can say, how do I donate? And it immediately takes us to the place, we're probably going to want to do that. So I think that's good. And also the AI is sort of based in the same tech as voice assistants, right? So voice assistants, where you might not be able to use like the internet or type things in, if you've got someone to set up a voice assistant for you, you can just add, it's more conversational, it's easy to ask the question that you need to ask. So I don't know, I think it's got a lot of avenues. And also I think it's another example of how, if you adopt it early, that's come on leaps and bounds. Almost every home seems to have an Alexa or a Google Nest now. So I think that AI is already here.
Oh yeah.
Time to get on board.
I think there's another side to it as well, Laura, about the sort of machine learning side of it as well, the machine learning element of AI, which always sort of excites me a little bit, because that's where you can bake it into the marketing automation and other things that you have. And there's like tiny charities using this like exceptionally well at the minute for service delivery, and there's no reason why it can't be flipped to be used for donations. So I always talk about the Welcome Center, who spoke at our conference back in 2020. They built this machine learning model about service users who visited the shelter. They was able to log everything that they did, so what sort of care they need, that sort of thing, to be able to predict in the future how much care they needed to provide. The same can be done for donors, right? Essentially, you could use machine learning to understand how various types of persona-based donors interact with you, to be able to see where you can improve, to see where you can change things, to build a website and funnels and journeys to better support your donors' interaction with you, essentially. So there's so many levels to AI, I think, of what we can do. And that was a small charity working with Datakind, who pro bono data organization in the sector, we're able to get that off the ground. So it's not like, it's again demystifying the fact that AI in this big artificial intelligence buzzword is only for charities who have millions and millions and millions of pounds of revenue, which is not the case. You can actually be box a little bit clever with it, understand what your needs and your goals are, and make it work for you in a way that, you know, bring in some nice partners, understand what you want to get out for it and make it work for you.
Yeah, I just want to add on one point that Laura made, which the chatbots drive this empathy by basically being, or you know, obviously they're not, but they are service users, or they perpetuate themselves, they're service users. So they answer the questions with this emotional intelligence that drives fundraising. But with the smart devices now, you have conversations or adverts. Mm. I cannot remember the example of the charity, but there is a charity, and I'm sure there's several, who actually have a smart device where the potential donor will have a conversation with an AI that is actually pretending, not pretending, they're not that clever, but they are essentially perpetuating themselves as the user. So they'll tell their story, they'll speak about what they go through on a daily basis, and it's just a computer, and it's so cheap for the charity because they have to do it once, yeah, and then they can do it, you know, millions of times. They just have to program. It's not cheap, sorry, it's definitely not cheap, but it is cost effective in terms of you can reach millions of people with a genuine empathy, and you can draw genuine empathy because that is it's part of an experience where you will kind of understand, you walk in the shoes, and that's really what drives donations. We know storytelling drives donations. We know getting those stories drives donations. You can have that in people's home, essentially automated. You know, like that's, it's kind of comes with ethical challenges too, of course. I mean, even there's something quite, maybe a little bit uncomfortable about that. I don't know about other people, but I sort of find it a bit uncomfortable. A bot essentially pretending to be someone who is experiencing something that they're not, you know, something's off. But at the same time, it is the success rate of this charity, which I can't remember, was through the roof. I'll put it in the resources later, so I'll find it, so that if anyone's listening, they can have a look. But
yeah,
I think that I mean, it again leads into sort of the VR stuff that we talk about as well. You know, we talk about immersive experiences, and the reason that's so successful is because people can, it draws that empathy because you're walking in someone else's shoes, you're really feeling their plight. Yeah. I mean, WaterAid did a VR campaign called Aftershock, which was a virtual reality documentary basically showing a story of a man in a pool and struggling after an earthquake. And the interesting thing is, you are there then. And so all this kind of, like, you know, you see on Children in Need, that's the drive. They're trying to make you feel empathy for these people. And it's really successful. It would be more successful if you're literally walking. I mean, literally, virtually, sorry. You're not virtually walking in the shoes or virtually talking to someone who is experiencing this, all quite cost effective in total because of the amount of people it can reach. Mm.
So, yeah, I did the charity water one way back when before I moved back to the UK. Went to a sort of meet and greet with Scott Harrison, the CEO of Charity Water in New York, and they had their VR experience there where you basically followed, I can't remember her name, but you followed this young girl on this 8-mile walk to get water, and you basically lived, essentially saw everything through her eyes. It was really incredible. Very, very powerful, very moving, just a great way to tell a story of one of their service users, essentially, and then went on to explain you live from the minute you set on this walk all the way through to them to Charity Water building this well, so the walk was shorter, all that sort of stuff. And it was one of those, if you could, it was like take all the money I can give you at the end of it. It was just incredible to be part of that journey. So yeah, I've lived one of these things. They are really, really powerful, really emotive. You can't really get that sort of experience by watching a video or anything like that. Like this was happening all in front of us. It was it was really powerful.
I think, yeah. Go on, Laura. Sorry.
Oh no, I was going to say there's a charity called Dig Deep, I think, and they have a virtual fun run, or I think it's 62 kilometers. No, 100 kilometers. Kilometers of Kenya. That's what it's called, anyway. And they had an interactive map that when you hit certain milestones, they would tell you a story of the people that they were helping. So, you know, to keep you going on, like when you hit certain milestones on your runner, but also like to show you show people where their money's going and what their fundraising's doing. And I think that's more AR than VR, but I just think it's really, I think it is a really powerful tool.
Yeah.
Just to go back onto the chatbots thing about making them, about making them, you know, they can be uncomfortable if it's a bit uncanny valley, you know, people, if it's pretending to be someone. I just think you need to be upfront about it. And then there's a lot, I think it is about trust, isn't it?
Yeah.
People generally know, you know, when you put on your VR headset that you're not actually, but it's still driving the empathy, it's still doing what it needs to do. But yeah, with chatbots, just be upfront. And I think that's half the issue.
Mm. I mean,
I think especially if you're asking for donations, you don't want to seem like a scam, right?
Yeah.
So I think if you put on, if you just, you know, had a stock image, I don't think it would work very well. But building in real experiences.
Sorry, go on, Chris.
I was just going to say, I think that goes for all donations, though. Any type, you just need to be transparent about what they're going to. And I think I always use Charity Water again as an example of that. They were really blunt about what they're fundraising for, and you could choose whether you wanted to fundraise to build wells in Africa or to cover overhead. And they were very transparent. If you don't cover overhead, we can't do this. So it was a case of, okay, well, I might split my donation and give... You know, it was then the choice of the donor at the end of the day. It wasn't like, okay, you give us and then we decide. You know, it's about being transparent. Yes, we need to keep the lights on to do the amazing stuff. People get that. People will understand that. But if you tell them, if you're kind of outright, sorry, I jumped in front of you.
I was going to say that actually, I this might seem a little flippant, but I remember, I can't remember the charity, but I think it's Donkey Century. And I remember when you watch an advert from them, they speak as the donkey that you're seeing, right? So it's like, I've had a hard journey. So, I mean, in a weird way, I...
Yes, exactly. Oh, my God.
I don't believe a donkey.
What?
I was just saying I don't believe the donkey is speaking to me, but I'm okay with that because I understand what they're doing.
These adverts make me cry all the time. Like, you're That's right. What I mean. It works. As long the system works.
If you're in on the sort of... agreed sort of etiquette, then I think it's all fine. But and I think there's, like, we're going back to VR as well, there are loads of other charities doing it. The National Autistic Society run a campaign called Too Much Information, which again creates a sense of empathy by putting yourself in someone else's shoes. But also with VR is really interesting because you've got museums and conservation charities and stuff like that, art charities, who during pandemics obviously had to shut everything they did, and they gave VR experiences of, you know, what was going on there. And that's a great way of keeping people interested, because a lot of the time we talk about driving empathy, but this is also, you know, of course, a massive part of the charity sector is also, you know, the heritage sector and sort of arts and museums and stuff like that. So they can also use all these tools to sort of drive their funding and make sure they can keep themselves afloat and stuff like that. So,
so really, I mean, the future, what does the future look like? We're never going to go back, are we? It's just going to be all virtual. My goodness.
Like having a box, but good.
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, this tech should never replace anything but bolster. Mm. And I think that's important to say, you know. If you think about the tech that's came even the last sort of 10, 5 years even, you know, text to donate fundraising platforms, more recently the virtual fundraising event. These were all new tech at some point, but they haven't replaced the traditional. You know, there's still a place for buckets and collection pots. There's still a place for physical events. We need those type of things. What new tech does and what the future holds is it expands reach. As we've said many a time during this, particularly with younger demographics, gives us more opportunities as charities, gives us in new avenues to explore. But as I said, it should always bolster, never replace, unless you're seeing something in the data that's in your fundraising data that suggests you should drop something. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, we often get a hard rap as a charity sector, I think, for being behind the curve. Mm-hmm. But really, when we're not doing too bad, considering we're a sector that's, you know, arguably under-resourced, underfunded, and we work really hard. I just want to make sure that we do feel motivated and excited by new tech, because it does open doors, and it doesn't close. It doesn't need to close doors. It doesn't. It's not so black and white. It's not like, well, if I do this, I can't do that. It's about finding balance, about understanding your own goals, your own strategy, what direction you want to go to, where you need to expand your donor base, how you need to get more money, and finding those solutions in the new tech solutions that will help deliver on that.
Mm. Completely agree. No, words out of my mouth, Chris. It's just about making fundraising as easy as possible for everyone, isn't it? Like, whichever way people are more comfortable with. Like, my mum really doesn't know how to use contactless, but I do, and I don't carry cash. So it's a lot. I'm like the queen. So it's, you know, a lot easier. I just think, yeah. And even in that, that's a very basic example. That's none of the high tech that we're talking about. But yeah, I disagree.
I think as well, as just if charities have an awareness of this tech, then when these any problems arise or they need to overcome any obstacles or they've got fundraising challenges like some of the ones Chris mentioned, that an awareness of this tech means they could go, okay, here is a solution. So it opens you, it gives you far more solutions to problems rather than constricting yourself in, okay, how do we raise more money? Let's throw another event. Let's do this. It could be, okay, how do we raise more money within the climate that we have? Let's change that. And so that's, I think having an awareness of this tech is good. Hopefully you've listened to this. Hopefully you've learned something and we've demystified a little bit, but just having that awareness that it's not that difficult to implement some of these really high tech solutions. And that, honestly, a bit of reading, a bit of research, a couple of you in.
They sound scarier than they are.
To put this all together. Yeah. Thanks, Laura.
Sorry. What he's trying to say is, everyone.
In other words, Laura, sum it up for us, please.
Everything is scarier than it sounds. Everything is scarier than it sounds. That's the opposite of what we're trying to say. Everything sounds scarier than it is. It will all be possible. And that's what Charity Digital is there for as well.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. When something is new, obviously, you know, we have to take a step back. We have to look into it. We have to investigate. We have to research. We have to talk to others. And we have to just take that step, really, don't we? So, yes. This has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. Wow, what a chat. What a chat. Thank you. Thanks, Chris, Laura, Johan. Thanks for taking the time out and supporting this podcast. And thank you to everyone for listening as well. I've enjoyed this so much. It's just a fascinating topic, and I have learned. And I told you you're all experts. I told you at the beginning.
Thanks, Liz. So,
and I hope all of our listeners too have enjoyed it. I'm sure you have, and you're all inspired to look further, look beyond what you're currently working with, and join that high-tech train. So let's close our podcast now. Thank you again to our panel. And to all of you out there, and we will see you very soon.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye.